Okay, we're holding on Chof Dalet Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins the Daisa. Where it says, we've been talking about various stories of tzaddikim. That's why the Rishonim called this Perek Pirkei D'Chassidim, the Perek of D'Chassidim. So now we're going to have a number of stories about Rav Chanina ben Dosa. First one having to do with rain. Rav Chanina ben Dosa have a ka'ozel, but we have this particular story we had in Yuma as well. Rav Chanina ben Dosa have a ka'ozel be'ucha. He was one time walking on the road, also mitra, and rain started falling. And in Akav, there's a girsa as well, that it wasn't just that the rain was bothering him, he was carrying a container of salt on his head, where the salt is going to dissolve from the rain.
Problem.
I'm on the phone, so he says to the Eivishter, to Bonish Lelam, Kola Olam Kula Benachas, the whole world is in pleasure, they're all having pleasure from the rain, but Bechanina Betzar, Bechanina is in Tzar, that the rain is bothering him. Pasak Mitra, so the rain stops. When he got back home, Amalafanav, then he says again, Ribbono Shel Olam, now the whole world is in tzar, that there's no rain, but Chanina ben Nachas, and Chanina is doing okay, because why is he doing okay? Rashi says, first of all, I'm at home. Second of all, I don't need rain, I don't own any fields or anything. So out of the rain doesn't really, and actually one of the Mepharshim adds as well, since the Gemara is going to say in a minute that he lived off a cab of carobs from one week to the next. That was what he ate all week, as a cob of carob, then it doesn't really matter to him if, you know, even if there's a drought or whatever, it doesn't really affect his food supply. Now, how b'chlal is it? You grow them on trees, but still, I mean, they're not as affected like rain or whatever or vegetables or whatever by the fluctuations of rain. Now, how b'chlal, I mean, how does he, what is it that, you know, because of his comfort, he's gonna make the rain stop for everybody? What's going on over here? So Marsha says the verse that the not necessarily was the rain actually needed at that point. You know, it's not that people were desperate for it yet. So in that case, okay, you know, the world is benachas. You know, they're doing nicely with the rain. But after all, it's not so bad if it stops now until he gets home. Mashenkin, once he gets home, then already, you know, let it start up again.
For now,
basically. There are other explanations of it, though, and in particular in Rishimus, we talk about this in Yoma, in Rishimus, that Rebbe has a deeper explanation of it. That, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that the world was sustained in the schus of Rav Chanina, of Rav Chanina ben Dosa. But on his level, really, he's on a level really beyond the world, as we're going to establish soon in the Gemara. So therefore, really, you know, if things are happening from his level, then there shouldn't need to be rain at all. We talked about earlier in the Masechta that rain is sometimes a hardship for people, and really, if it weren't for the fact the world needs it, the Chachamim would have long since davened that there shouldn't have to be any. We had a couple of days ago the idea that when the Jewish people are doing what they're supposed to, it only rains at night and only twice, only two nights a week instead of during the day. He was traveling during the day, so he's bothered by the fact. He's saying Kol Olam Kol Benachas, the whole world is doing very nicely on their level, but V'chanina B'tzar. But it seems I've gone down from my level. Why, if the world is getting its sustenance through me, then why does there have to be rain during the day? From my level, either there shouldn't have to be rain at all, and yet things will grow, and yet things will still grow. The Gemara says something similar in Bava Metzia about Rebbe, that during the years that Rebbe had toothaches and various other aches and pains and whatever, that the world didn't need rain, and yet everything grew profusely. Or at best, it should rain at night. So he's saying the whole world is benachas, and then Chanina is the tzar. So the rain stops. Then when he gets back home, so this is when he was on the road, meaning when he's being involved with the world. Then when he gets back home, when he's already back to his own high level, then he says, well, in that case, then I'm not, you know, I'm already on a whole different level than the world, really. So in that case, then fine, you know, the world on its level needs rain at this time. So fine, let it, you know, now Chanina is benachas because I'm back where I belong, Baruchnius, but the world is bizarre because they're not able to have their hashpa through me. That's the next thing the Gemara is going to say. So Amar Rabbi Yosef, Maya Hanya Leitzloisa, the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Rav Chanina ben Dosa. What good does the Kohen Gadol's tefillah do relative to Rav Chanina ben Dosa? Here he's davening that Hashem should not listen to travelers' tefillahs to stop the rain, and yet Rav Chanina ben Dosa is able to override that. This man, as we learned in the Mishnah in Yom Ha'im, is followed tefillah tzara b'bayit ha'chitzen, that the Kohen Gadol, after he finished bringing the Torah and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, would say a short tefillah in the outer chamber in the Heichal. He kept it short to be set over there in order not to scare the people, so they don't think he died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. My Masli, so what was his tefillah? Rovin ba Odo Virava ba Avadam Tavayo, which made the Rav Yehuda, he would say, Yehirotin Melchanach Hashem Elokeinu, Shetehesh Hashanazu, Geshumo Ushchuna, that this year should be rainy and hot. That's what he means, Shchuna Mal, you see. Is a hot year, actually, Marsha says Shchuna means exceptionally hot. Is that a good thing? Global warming. I don't have a curiosity. It's not such a good thing. Ella, no, what he meant was, Im Shchuna Tehei Geshuma, if it's been decided, Min HaShemayim, that it should be a hot year, then at least it should be rainy to compensate for that, because otherwise the heat will damage things. Yeah. Tehei Geshuma Utzlola, it should be a year of rain and of dew. And he would continue, in his tefillah, Vayikonis Levanach HaTefillah Oved Drachim, the tefillah of people, of passers by, of people who are traveling and are inconvenienced by the rain, shouldn't come to you. That's the point why we're bringing this over here. Yerub Chanina Mendoza is able to override that. Actually, some of the Mepharshim point out that's the point. So he's saying Ovrei Drachim and Ovrei Meloshim, like people who are over Averis. So yeah, even, you know, but Baruch Chanina Mendoza, of course, is far beyond that. Sort of, yeah. Yeah, in that Rishima that ever continues, although the end of the Rishima is missing, so we don't know the whole thing, but in that Rishima that ever continues, the point why Rabbi Yosef is making this point, the Kohen Gadol and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's, you know, Olam Shana is, you know, the ultimate Olam, the ultimate of Shana and the ultimate of Nefesh, all joined together, and even that, Rabbi Chanina Mendoza overrides that, because he's beyond all that. He's one of the Shmona Nesicha Bnei Adam. No, that's the point. In other words, the regular Ovid Zerachim, the Kohen Gadol is davening that Hashem shouldn't listen to their tefillahs. It should still send rain. Either Ovid Zerachim are inconvenient, tough luck on them. But Rav Chanina Mendoza is able to override that.
Because he never committed any sin.
Well, that's one reason, yeah. But in the Rebbe's explanation, it's not just because he didn't commit any sin, neither did many people. It's because he's b'chlal beyond, he's b'chlal from a level beyond the world. The Shiva we learned in Sukkah, the Shemona, the Shiva Royim, or Shemona Nesicha Bnei Adam. The Shiva Royim are the ones who bring down the Ur Pnimi, and then the Shemona Nesicha Bnei Adam are the ones who bring down the Ur Makif, who bring the Ur Makif that can't even penetrate because it's too high up. That's what Chanina Mendoza is at that time. As we're going to see soon in the Gemara, something else about him. Yeah. Rav Acha Brei D'Rava Messiah Mishmei D'Rav Yehuda. Rav Acha Brei D'Rava continued also in the name of Rav Yehuda, that there was more to the Kohen Gadol Tefillah. He would continue, Lo Yadi Avid Shulton Medves Yehuda. There should never be missing somebody from the descendants of Yehuda who exercises leadership, meaning either a king or a Reshkalotza, whatever. The Jewish people, your Jewish people, should not need each other for panasa, and they should not need to come on to other nations either. They should be self-sufficient. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes not. We learned all the way in the beginning of Brachot that the Dovid HaMelech's advisors used to come to him all the time and tell him, you know, the Jewish people need panasa, and he tells them, well, then let them go do business with each other, and they tell him, you know, Ein HaKremes must be Asari, it's not enough for our needs. And he tells them, in that case, we have the various bands of Goyim that are harassing Eretz Yisrael and plundering and whatever, go fight against them, and that'll ease the economic burden. But here also we're saying the same kind of thing, that the Kohen Gadol is davening, that there shouldn't have to be, the Jewish people don't need to take tzedakah from each other, they don't need to take tzedakah from the Goyim around. If there's Goyim who are harassing them, they should be able to defeat them. Another thing about Rav Chanina Mendoza, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, B'chol Yom V'Yom Baskol Yotzes V'Emeres, every single day a Baskol comes out and says, Kol Olam Kula Nizin B'Shvil Chanina B'ni, the whole world is sustained in B'Shvil for the sake of my son Chanina. And actually, the Baal Shem Tov said a word that's brought in a number of Sifrei Chassidus, the Chassidus Chabad and Chassidus Klalis, that the word B'Shvil here also means in the path, Shvil of the path. So the whole world is sustained through the path that's blazed by Rav Chanina Mendoza. For Chanina Bni, Daya, the Kav Chorovim, Erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos. And as for Chanina himself, he makes do with a Kav of carobs from Erev Shabbos till Erev Shabbos. And that would be his food for the entire week, Kav of carobs.
He brings the food to the whole world.
Yeah. So that's a further thing with this from the Baal Shem Tov is like he's the channel through which all the hashpah comes down to the world. But like a good well-made pipe doesn't keep any of the liquid in it. It all flows through. So the same thing. Rav Chanina Mendoza doesn't keep anything for himself. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea related to this thing that we were just saying, that Rav Chanina Mendoza is from the Shmona Nesicha Bnei Adam, that he's b'chlal beyond the parameters of the world. We learned in Rosh Hashanah a concept. We learned that there is the world will last. The world, as we know it, will last 6,000 years. B'chad charuv, or trei charuv, we had over there 1,000 or 2,000 years of destruction, whatever that meant. That'll be on a higher level, whatever. Rav Chanina Mendoza belongs to that level already. even though he was living during the 6,000 years, he belongs to that level when the world is not going to be the kind of world that we'll recognize anymore. It's like something totally beyond that. Therefore, he lives off Cheruvim, Meloshin Vachad Cheruv. He's still a human being in that sense, but as we're going to see in the continuation of these stories, he lives off Nissim. To him and his family, Nissim and Teva are the same thing in many ways. No, and in fact, Benayahu, Ben Yahyad, or whatever, makes the whole calculation, why exactly a calf? He calculates he fasted certain days of the week, he ate a certain amount for each of his meals, and he makes the whole calculation, why dafka a calf? But yeah.
Even Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai wasn't,
no? Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai is on a different level. Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai is one of the Bnei Aliyah, one of the really exceptional. There's different kinds of things. I mean, we know, for example, there's the idea that's brought in a few places in Chassidus. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, his greatness is in Torah. That's why we talked about the other day when there was rain. One time when they needed rain, he set over a mimer in Torah, and rain started falling as opposed to Chaim Amagel Davin for it. But here also with Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, there's the idea made that you really don't find any statements in halacha from Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. Everything we have about him is in Agadta, or we have a vote from him in Pirkei Avos. But etc. But you don't really have any halachas from him because that wasn't really his Indian. Was not so much Torah as tefillah and really like being beyond the world, being bringing down the Urmakif to the world.
That's why he
wasn't. Yeah. Not really wasn't, but that's why we don't really find him talking in halacha so much. Yeah. So, his wife used to make a habit of heating up the oven every Erev Shabbos, and she'd throw into the fire something that'll make a thick smoke, because of embarrassment. Everybody else is baking L'Kavod Shabbos, which is actually the halacha, you're supposed to bake bread L'Kavod Shabbos, the Magen Avraham learns it from our Gemara. She didn't have anything, because they're living off a Kav Cheruvim from one week to the next. But in order that people shouldn't be talking about them, she's not baking anything on Kavod Shabbos, she would pretend she'd have this big smoke coming out of her chimney, so everybody would think that she's making challah like everybody else. Well, Havalah, right? Well, Havalah Shibab Tabishta. She had a bad neighbor, Amra, and this neighbor woman said to herself, Mechdi, now let's consider. Your diner, the less below lemidi. I know perfectly well that they don't have anything. My kulahai. So what's all this smoke coming out of the chimney every week? So she went and knocked on the door. Ichsefa, Rav Chanina Vendosa's wife, was embarrassed, but Ailula Indirona, and she went into one of the other rooms of the house, so she doesn't have to face her neighbor. But what's going to happen? Her neighbor's going to open up the oven, and she's going to find there sticks or whatever. Isabla Nisa, a nest happened to her. Dechazio, the Tanura Moli Lachma, the neighbor all of a sudden saw that the oven is full of bread, but Agna Moli Lisha, and that the kneading trough over there, the bowl where to knead the dough, is full of dough. Amrullah, so she called out to her, Planissa, whatever Rabbanina Mendoza's wife's name was. Icy Masa, bring a shovel to take whatever it's called, to take the bread out of the oven. The Kokhorik Lachma, because your bread is going to burn. Still, it's like a good neighbor, she's pretending, whatever, yeah. Amrullah, so Rabbanina Mendoza's wife tells her, okay, Afanullah, Hachi Ali, that's in fact why I went into the other room. And Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Afhila Habi Mir the Nichnasa. In fact, she really did go into the other room to get a shovel to get the bread out. She was accustomed to having Nissim happen to her. So she knew that the Eidish is not going to allow them to be embarrassed like that. So yes, when she heard the neighbor knocking and she went into the other room, it wasn't just because she was embarrassed. It was she knew I'm going to go and get the shovel, which I have there ready always because I know at any time the Eibishter can make me a nest. And sure enough, that's exactly why she went. And sure enough, the nest happened. So she didn't want, as much as possible, rely on Nissim. But like this, she knew that she had this mirdah prepared. That if a nest is needed, then she'll have it. Kisufa is embarrassment. No, Kisufa is embarrassment. And Mefarshim talk about how exactly then is she allowed to have hana from this bread? Didn't we say yesterday you're not allowed to have hana from Ma'isa Nissim? All kinds of different explanations. One of them is that in this case she did put in something. They have the kaf charuvin. Maybe they had a little tiny bit of dough as well. All it is Eivishta made a nest and it grew to much larger proportions, like we had yesterday with a lazer ishvirta. So fine, right. So therefore it's less of an issue of making use of a nest when already you started with something.
She really didn't want it.
Well, there's that too. Yeah. Well.
The neighbor not come to
him,
that's what happened?
I guess not. Huh? So one time, Rav Chanina Mendoza's wife said to him,
not
what? I don't know. Amr le Jvesu, one time Rav Chanina ben Dosa's wife says to him, listen, at emes nezo ben tzar kol ahai, how long are we going to keep on going having tzar like this? We've got to do something. Amr lo, so he asked her, my nevet, okay, what do you want me to do? She says, boi rachmi, the nezo v'lachamidi, ask for rachmim, daven to the Eivishter, that he should give you something. Boi rachmi, so sure enough he davened. Yob tzakamin pisas yab, something like an appearance of like a palm of a hand, came down min ha-shamayim. V'yahavu lechad kara depsoda de tava. And they gave him one leg of a golden table. Well, chazoi b'chelma, there's different geosoys over here, whether it's she saw in a dream or he saw, whatever it is, in a dream, asidi tzadiki de'ochra apsoda de'daba de'islai tzlas kari, that the tzadikim in the future, in Olam Haba, in Gan Eden, whatever, are going to be eating all on tables, on golden tables that have three legs, va'at echelas apsoda de'tshe kari, and you, or Ano, whatever, or we, are going to be eating on a table of only two legs. Because the leg has been given away. Amr le, or Amr la, nichalach de mechal achli kula ama absurda de mishlam. Do you want then that everybody else should be eating at a complete table va'anan absurda de mechaser? And we should be eating at a table that's lacking a leg? No. Amr le, so she says, table my nevid. Okay, well, what are we supposed to do? We have the leg now. What are we supposed to do about it? She says, okay, boy rachmi de shkulinu minach. Then daven, that daven to the Eivishter that he should take it back from you. Boy Rachmi, sure enough, he davened or shkolohu, and they took back the leg. Tana, we learn in a brayso, Godol haya nes achron yosim in erishin. The second nes was even bigger than the first one. Digmiri, because we have the Kabbalah, the mehav yahav yimin hashemayim, they give, mishkal leshakta. Usually the Eivishter doesn't take back. Alderach, like we learned in Shabbos, the idea that whenever the Eivishter makes a gzeira for good, he never takes it back. So the same thing, if the Eivishter had decided to give him this good, this good, the table, like usually the Eivishter doesn't take back a bracha. But in this case, if the Eivishter accepted it back, is a bigger nest than originally. So what's this deal with a table of three legs and two legs? A few different beforeshim talk about different possibilities. One is that the three legs that everybody else has at their table represent the three things that the world stands on, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. So why are they giving him the one leg? Marsha says the one leg they're giving him represents the avodah of tefillah, which he excelled in. Fine, you want a reward for your avodah. Mainly, then you want a reward for what you're accomplishing in the world. The main thing you're accomplishing is avodah. Therefore, you deserve the leg of avodah. But then you're not going to have it. Let them have it. Other mepharshim talk about the idea that actually, so why Klal is his wife so bothered that they're poor? I mean, she's a tzaddikus. So what if they're poor? What's it to her? She's bothered by the fact that they can't do gemilas chasadim. They can't do tzedakah. They don't have enough. But
what about giving away this leg?
One second. So that's the thing. So they get the leg representing Gmilas Chasadim, but actually the thing is that the thing is like this. Yes, a person can. Yes, now they'd be able to actually do Gmilas Chasadim. But the truth is when why is that? I mean, Lachora, they should be able to do both. Like this, they'll be able to do better Gmilas Chasadim. The vort is like this. No, so the vort is like this. They say. Really, when a person does Gmilas Chasadim, inevitably there is some small flaw in it. I mean, first of all, not everybody who asks for tzedakah really deserves it. It's hard to give it in a way that you don't embarrass them. There's all kinds of different issues in it. Whereas when you really, really want to give tzedakah and you're just not able to because you don't have, in a way, that's the best possible gemilas chasadim. So therefore, if she's asking for something and they end up getting the table leg, it's like they're being told, fine, now you'll be able to do actual practical gemilas chasadim. But now you won't have the perfection of it like you had before. And therefore, he davens that the leg should be given back, and that way, at least they have the complete best possible way of doing it, machshava.
Which is to
Yanim don't get okay. That's
not
it.
Have the money and
right, but that's yeah. There's an interesting verse that I saw in this connection. I don't remember who says this. On the pasuk, we say in Ashrei, Ritzon Yirei of Yaseh Ves Shavatam Yishma B'Yeshiim. David does the rotzin of those who fear him, and their cry, he hears and he saves them. Well, if he does what they need, then what does he need to hear their cry? It's talking about this case over here. You can have a person who the Eivishter decides to give them something, but then that's it. They lost that part of their Olam Haba, and they're never going to be able to give it back. The Eivishter is not going to accept it back. Rav Chanina ben Dosa is not only Ritzon Yirei of Yaseh, the Eivishter does what he wants to give him the leg v'chatchila, but even Ves Shavasim Yishma, the Eivishter hears his cry, v'yashiyim, and he saves them that they'll have their complete tzchai Olam Haba.
Along the line, but Shem
is
complete
shleimus.
Shleimus
means
he can only give, he can't take.
Maybe, yeah.
Whatever he wants, but if that's the case, every time we ask something to the Eivishter, it's a
mitzvah,
we're losing something from
an average person doesn't have the complete kavanah in it either, you know. And so you might as well do the mitzvah in practice. You know, let the as the Alter Rebbe said to somebody who was complaining that he's not giving tzedakah with real kavana. You may not have kavana, but the aniyim are having plenty of kavana. Another time, Chad Beis Shimshi, one time Friday night Bein Hashmashos. So Rashi says over here, I don't really know why Beis Shimshi just means Bein Hashmashos. Why after Friday night? Rashi over here says, I don't know why. In a few other places, there's different explanations that Rashi gives. One of them is because whenever people think of Bein Hashmashos, they think of Friday night. Anyway, so one Friday Bein Hashmashos, Chazir Livrati Dehava Satsiva. Rav Chanina Mendoza saw his daughter looked upset. Amaloi, after Biti Lamai Satsiva, what are you upset about? I mixed up the container of vinegar with the container of oil. We had locked him in early Shabbos. I lit the Shabbos candles with vinegar. And now they're going to go out soon. Vinegar doesn't burn. Amrullah, he says to her, Biti, what do you care? What do you worry about? The same Eivishter who told oil to burn can tell vinegar to burn. Tana. And that Tana, we learn in the Braise, in fact, the vinegar continued to burn all that day throughout Shabbos, until they took light from it for Abdullah. So Rashi says they took light from it for Abdullah rather than using it itself for Abdullah, because again, you're not supposed to use Ma'is and Nisim whenever possible. So for Shabbos, different Mepharshim talk about the different possibilities. How are they able to use it for Shabbos themselves? Some Mepharshim say, okay, you don't have a choice. What else are you going to do? You can't go around in the dark. But other Mepharshim actually say that from here we see there was the daughter lit her Shabbos candles with vinegar. The mother lit her Shabbos candles with olive oil, so they used those. Hers continued to burn as well to show that Misham and Lashem and Viadlik, to show that the next will happen, that she shouldn't be upset. But they didn't actually need them, they were able to use the mother's candles. That may be one of the sources for, 40 years ago when the Rebbe came out with Mirka Neshek, that girls should light Shabbos candles even when their mothers are, this may be one of the makaris for it, that we see that a daughter lights Shabbos candles even when her mother is as well.
That means
it was on an Erev Shabbos, yeah. If it was during the week, it wouldn't have been a problem. Just pour out the vinegar and light oil instead, yeah. Another case, Rav Chanina ben Dosa Havalei Hanach Izi. He had some goats. Omrele, and people told him, come Afsadon. They're ruining our fields. They're grazing in our fields. Omar, so he said, if indeed they're ruining your field, then bears, or Rashi says actually wolves, should eat them. And if not, then then this evening when the goats come home from grazing all day, they should each come home carrying or dragging a bear on their horns. Sure enough, that evening every one of them came schlepping a bear along by its horns. They each killed a bear and they each killed a bear and dragged him by their horns. Obviously it showed that he was right, that they're not ruining the field. What do you mean, Torah Lava Shemayim? No. Normally you're not supposed to, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, you're not supposed to raise goats in Eretz Yisrael. He had a special reason for having these goats. We'll talk about it in a few lines. Okay. But people are complaining to him that they're ruining our fields. He wanted to demonstrate that it's not true. That the whole reason why you can't grow, why you can't raise goats in Eretz Yisrael because they harm other people's fields doesn't apply over here. And actually, the Gemara brings this in a different connection in Halacha in Bava Metzia. The Gemara talks about an issue over there where you have a tenant and a tenant and a landlord are arguing about what's going on in the field. That one of them there was a drought or whatever, and one of if your fault, you don't have enough schos, you don't have enough schos, whatever. The Gemara brings if I have the schos, it's a case over there actually where you have a shepherd taking care of your animals. If wild animals attacked, if it was a case where you're able to fight them off, and he doesn't, then he's negligent. Otherwise, you say, it was an onus. So the question is, why don't you say, why? I would have had the schus that, I could be like Rav Chanina Mendoza and have the wolves schlep home the bears on their horns. And, the person might answer, I might not be zeicha to a big nest like that, but I might be zeicha to a smaller nest. I might have been able to do, like Dovin HaMelech, for example, to be able to kill the bear and wolf, to be able to kill the bear or wolf myself. Yeah. Anyway. Another story with him. He had, Rav Hanina ben Doita had a neighbor, a woman neighbor, who was building a house, and there were the beams, the roof beams were not long enough to reach from one wall to the other. After the family, so she came to Rav Hanina ben Doita, she says, I built the house and the beams are not long enough. The pastress, I guess she couldn't afford longer ones, I don't know. Amalai, he asked her, Mashmeich, what's your name? Amalai, Iku. Amalai, he said, okay, Iku nimtu kshurayich. Iku, let your beams extend. Let your beams be long enough. He said to her, he said, yeah. And sure enough, Tana, we learn in a braisa, he gil, not only they reached, Achiyotu Amalekan, but Amalekan, they actually stuck out an ama on each side of the house. The Yesha, I mean, others say that it was different. The nest was different, sniffing asom. A nest happened and extra pieces were stuck on to the ends of the beams. So like you could tell looking at the beam, like you had the original beam and then you had the extensions that were put onto it. Either way, it was long enough. Tanya, and in fact we learned about it, the Plimo Yomer, Anira Isi Oisabais, I saw that house. Plimo is one of the Talmidim of Rebbe. So he lived like 200 years after the Hanina Mendoza, because Hanina Mendoza lived in the time of Yechim and Zakai around the time of the Churban. Rebbe is like 150, 200 years later. So Plimo says, Anira Isi Oisabais, I saw that house. While your Kurois of Yotis Amalekan by Amalekan, sure enough, the beams of it stuck out an Amma on each side. But Omrili, and people told me, by Zeshakir, Rukhanina Mendoza with Filate. This is the house that Rukhanina Mendoza roofed it with his Tfilas. Again, you have Mephoshim discuss the issue as to how is he able to do that. She's going to end up being benefiting from Mice and Nisim, and we said several times you're not supposed to do that. A lot of different answers. Among them are maybe she wasn't makpid on that, or there's an answer that there's a difference whether the person themselves that davened for the nest is benefiting from it. He or not. Rav Hanina ben Doita davened, she's going to be living there. And there's several other answers. Also, another answer is that she's not benefiting directly from the beams themselves, but rather from the roof, or whatever. You can daven for a nest, but you're not supposed to use something that's openly mice and nisim. We learned before that when a nest happens, because of a person's chosim, it takes away some of his chosim. So like this, you shouldn't actually use it. This is, we had yesterday the story with the malachim putting sand and then turning it into flour. That Rabbi Hodo or Rabbi Mori says to the people, don't buy from this. It's from mice and nisim. The concept that you're not supposed to use stuff from mice and nisim, where possible. Now, going back to the story with the goats, from Chanin ben Dosim, where did he have goats from? First of all, Baha'ani Havi, he was poor. We said before he lived off a calf of Chorubim from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, so he didn't have the money to buy goats. But, and besides, Amr Chacham, En Megadlin Behem Adaka Be'eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to raise small cattle, small animals, meaning sheep and goats, you know, Eretz Yisrael, because they graze all over the place, they graze in other people's fields, they browse on the trees and destroy them, etc. What do you mean, there's a minute of those days? The din is that you're in Megadlin Behem Adaka Be'eretz Yisrael. The Gemara has a whole sugya about it in Bava Kama. I mean, there's details about it, you can raise them in places where nobody lives, etc., but, yeah.
Didn't eat Behem Adaka
from those? No, not they didn't eat. You're not allowed to raise them in Eretz Yisrael. They would raise them in other places, and then they import them. Yeah, basically, yeah, they could raise them, yeah, exactly, in like places like common ground or whatever, yeah. Here, preposterous, he has them around his house, because he said they come home every evening. Omer Pinchas, it happened like this. Mice of Ova Adam Echad al Pesach Bay. So it happened once that somebody passed by Rav Hanina Mendoza's house. V'niyachsham tarnu golden. He put down chickens over there, and then he forgot about them. U'matza'asan ishtei shor Rav Hanina Mendoza. Rav Hanina Mendoza's wife found him. V'omalah, and he tells her, al terkli mebeit sehen. Don't eat any of their eggs because they don't belong to us. We have to hold on to them until the guy comes back. Now technically they didn't need to. The din in Bava Metzia is that actually if you find animals and the cost of taking care of them is more than they're worth after a couple of months, depending on the type of animal, technically what you can do is you sell them for cash, you set aside the cash, you put it in a drawer or whatever, and you hold on to it until the guy comes back. Rav Hanina Mendoza wanted to go looking at Mishra's Adin. So the Hebrew based in the town of Golem, so the chickens ended up laying more eggs, and the eggs hatched into more chickens, and pretty soon Bava Metzia noticed it was causing them a lot of trouble. So he sold them. The Khanabid man is in, and he bought goats with the money. Well, pa'amachas ova oitza adam sh'avdim v'men ha'tanagur. Then one time, that person who had lost the chickens passed by, va'amal ha'chaveira, and he says to his friend, you know, b'kani nachti ha'tanagur, actually, many years ago, I one time put down my chickens over here. Shamar Rav Chanina, so Rav Chanina overhears, Amalai, yesh l'chal b'han simen, you have a simen, Amalai hein, not only simen, but not also izin. So he gave him a simen, and he took his goats. The hein izi da'asu drubi b'kanayu. Those are the goats that we said before that schlepped home the bears or the wolves on their horns, that so Rav Chanina ben Doiser was so certain that they're not damaging anybody else's field, that he... Now, when you get down to it, I mean, he's a shomer aveda. He can't be careless with these animals. So how does he have the right to say that if they're really damaging your fields, then let the wolves eat them? Because he was so certain that they're not, that he was able to say that. Well, until the chickens got too much for him, and then he fed the goats. But yeah, that's the point. In other words, la halacha, you wouldn't have had to do that. La halacha, you could have sold the chickens after a couple of days or weeks or whatever it is, and put away the cash. But like this, you know, the man has something that keeps on growing. The truth is, Marsha says, I don't really like this girsa, because how does this help, really? So he, you know, you're telling me you're not allowed to grow behema daka in Eretz Yisrael. So how does it help that because he sold the chickens for goats? Sell the chickens and buy some other kind of animals. Could have bought some other kind of animals that you're allowed to raise in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
Maybe they were the only behemoths that were viable.
Maybe, or, you know, there are different proportions talk about different possibilities. Maybe it's only you're not allowed to raise them, like, from infancy, because then they browse a lot around a lot and destroy things, but, you know, he bought fully grown ones. Maybe it's different, yeah, you know. And besides which, also, since we just said, since the whole reason why you're not allowed to grow behemoth daka b'Eretz Yisrael is because they damage other people's fields, Rav Chanina ben Doiser is so certain, being such a tzaddik, that his goats, or the goats that he's watching, whatever, are not going to, then for him, that halacha doesn't apply.
He had a large yard.
Oh, come on. He's an onion. He's living off a kav charuf and Lev Shabbos. Lev Shabbos. He didn't have that big a yard.
They
could have
had it,
he would
have sold it.
Yeah.
And even growing your own backyard, it's
for
trees.
Yeah. It's both. It's both, really. I mean, there's one reason is because they browse at other people's fields, and the other reason is because they destroy the trees. There's large areas, you know. When you get down to it, I mean, you know, the whole part of the world, you know, you can read it. You know, you read in books all the time. They call it the Fertile Crescent, the area of Israel, Syria, Iraq, that whole area, because you know it used to be it's where they developed agriculture. It's where, you know, it used to be the world's breadbasket. Nowadays, mostly in a lot of these places, are desert. A big part of the reason for that is because people would raise sheep and goats and whatnot in these places, and they just browse on everything that grows and destroy them. Okay, but so it depends where. You have to manage things carefully. They have the same kind of problem in Australia. They raise tons of sheep in Australia, and they have a constant problem where they deforest the landscapes. So Australia keeps on getting drier and drier because of that. Yeah.
Australia has now had a drought because they cut the trees.
Yeah. With large part of it. There's a lot of reasons for it, but one big reason is because they've
won. Anyway. If they have more trees, they would have more rain now.
Yeah. Possible. Anyway, no, let's get back to the Gemara. Another story of a Tana, or actually this is an Amoda, actually Rav Elazar ben Pedas was an Amoda, one of the main Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, that he was also very poor, like Rav Chanina ben Doiser. Here's a story about him. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, d'chikalei milsa tova. He was very, very poor. One time, Ovad Milsa, one time he had the thing done. The thing in the Ovad Milsa in Gemara terminology means he had bloodletting done. V'lehavalei midi l'mitza. I mean, he didn't have anything to eat afterwards. We said the other day, by a story of Abahumna, that after you have bloodlet, you're supposed to eat something to restore your health. He couldn't afford anything. Shaka borrowed the tumah, so he took a piece of garlic, the shadi b'kumah, and put it in his mouth. Apparently, that was all he could find to eat. Chalash libe, he felt weak. He fainted. Rashi says, v'nim, and he fainted and fell asleep. Also, rabbanon shaluyibet l'shayu libe. The rabbanon went to ask how he's doing, to be mevaka chayla. Chazyuhu, they saw in his sleep. Dekabachi v'chayich, he was first crying, then laughing. V'nafak tzitzisa denura ma'apurse, and a spark of fire came out of his forehead. Ki itar, when he woke up, Amrulay, they asked him, my time of kabachis v'chayichis, why'd you cry and laugh? Amalu, he says like this, to have a Yosef Imi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in my dream, the Ebishter was sitting with me, Va'amrile, and I said to him, Ad Mosei Etzar, Baha'i Alma, how long am I going to be suffering like this in the world? Amalu, and he said to me, Elozabni, Nichalach Da'apche La'alma Mereisha, do you want that I turn over the world and then start all over from the beginning? Epshet B'sialdus B'shaita D'mizayini, maybe you'll be born in a time under a mazel where your natural mazel is that plenty. You know, through Ein Mazel Yisrael, but all that means is that it takes tremendous chosim to overcome it. But even so, you know, ordinarily, even a yid has a certain mazel. Or what does that mean? The apchil alam mereisha, what the Eibush is going to start over the whole world for the sake of Rebbe Loza. So some of the Farshim say, and among them Marsha, that no, what it means is Hashem is offering him, how about you'll be reborn? You personally, you the Olam Katan, will be reborn, and maybe you'll be born under a mazel of plenty, because the person is an Olam Katan. And Marsha says, here we have, this is an example of a Gemara where we see the concept of Gilgulim. Of course he could. The Eibishter is called Yachol, but the Derech HaTeva, the Eibishter usually operates within Derech HaTeva, like we said the other day. So to speak, a Tircha to the Eibishter to have to undo that. And in Rebbe Loza's case, his Teva, his Teva Dikah Mazel, is he's not going to be. Amri L'chamei, so Rebbe Loza continues telling over what the conversation. I said to the Eibishter, what Kula Haiva Efshir? You're telling me you'd go to all that length, and even so, it's only maybe I'll be born in a time of plenty? Amulei. So then I asked him something else. So far that's why he cried. Well, no, the crying actually is something else. Wait. Amulei. Then I asked him like this: the chayit fei or the chayina. What's more so far? How long I've lived up until now, or how long I have yet to live? Amulei. So he says to me, the chayit. You've lived more than you're going to live. In other words, your life is over. Is more than half over. So I said to the Eibishter, "In came Leibarina. You know what? Then, in that case, I don't need your offer to overturn the world or to overturn my personal world and whatever and start all over. I may as well stick with what I have. Why? For one thing, Mepharshim say, because Rebbe Elazar is concerned about the fact. Why is he so concerned about being poor anyway? Because for one thing, the Gemara mentions in Nedarim that Anius, that being poor, is one of those things that Ma'averas Adam Al Daitav Al Das Kerner. Like it makes a person crazy and it makes him go against what the Eibishter wants. Because like a person is so desperate, he'll do whatever it takes to earn a dollar. So Rebbe Elazar is concerned about that. So he asks the Eibishter, If I still have most of my life yet to live, then yeah, maybe it is back of worth it to start all over. If I've already lived, if the Eibishter tells him you've lived most of your life, Rebbe Loza says to himself, oh, in that case then, the Gemara says, Kivin Shiyatsu Roy Shneiser Shal Adam Vlechot or Shuvenichot. If this person has lived more than half of his life and has not sinned, then it's pretty much a guarantee that he's not going to in the future. So fine, in that case, I know already I've lived without Chet up until now. In that case, I may as well finish it off, rather than starting over and chancing it, basically. Okay, but the fact is, but on the other hand, he's a tzaddik, and that tzaddik can be misalt and kareem chayim, right? So, because an oni is special to men. No, of course not. But,
yeah.
No, anyway, no. Yeah. All right. Amali, so the Eibishter says to me, Bahai agra de amrit loibo'ina, as reward for the fact that you say I don't want, meaning that you understand what's important and what's important in life, I will give you in Olam Haba 13 rivers of Afar Simon oil, which is a very fragrant balsam oil. It's a very fragrant oil. Demishcha Afar Simon Dachin, a pure balsam oil. Kipras v'Diglas, which will be as large as the Pras and Diglas rivers, the Pras and the Chideko, which are huge rivers. Dema'angas v'hu, that you can enjoy yourself with them. In terms of the mashal, it's like, you know, imagine like you have a person who has an estate with 13 rivers like that. He can walk around from one to another, bathe in them, enjoy himself in them, whatever. Beruchnius, it may, obviously means a very high thing. Beruchnius. One thing it talks about in Chassidus is the idea that you have the kashemen hatov al arosh, that the shemen is the shemen of chokhma. No, these rivers of pure afar siman oil represent a very high level of like what exudes from Eibishter's chokhma. So that's 13 representing the 13 midas, representing the Yud Gomer midas Rachamim. So this is what he's going to be zeicha to. So far we have, that's why he cried, to know that his life is more than half over. But on the other hand, he laughed when the Eibishter told him what kind of reward he's going to get. Amri l'kamei, but Rebbe Loza continues telling the conversation. I said to the Eibishter, "Hi, betuloi, that's all you're going to give me? Nothing else?" Amali, so the Eibishter says, "Nu l'chabrach ma'ayahivna." So what am I supposed to give your friends then? If I give more to you, I'm going to have to take away from them. Amri Leis, I said to him, but I'm not Gabra the Lesley, but you know, okay, I'm not asking for you to give from what belongs to my friends, the Tamar HaChamim. Give me from something that would have gone to something who himself doesn't have any. In other words, you have a person who lost the Chelik and Olam Haba, so fine, let me have his instead. There is such a concept, the Gemara mentions, that a tzaddik gets his own Chelik and Gan Eden, and also the Chelik of the Rosha, who didn't deserve it. Or some of Farshim say that actually he's asking it as a question. But Anomi Gabra the Let's Labor, you know, am I asking this from somebody, from a human being who may not have enough? I'm asking from you. You have everything. You can give me more and there's still enough left for everybody else. Machin Biskutla Aputoi. So the Eivishter hit me with a flick on my forehead. Rashi describes a flick, like you take your fingers like this and you flick with your fingernail against something. So the Eivishter did that, so to speak, on my forehead. But Amali, and he says to me, Elozabri, Giri Bach Giri, my arrows, I hit you with my arrows. So what Rashi says, L'ched v'ba'almam, okay, like the Eivishter is just saying it as an expression of joy, like playing around, Kaviyachol. Other Mepharshim talk about there's other meanings in this. One of them, Ben Yehoyada, talks about the idea that basically that Rabbi Lazar in this last bit of the conversation misunderstood what Eivishter was saying. He's saying, don't you have any more for me? And the Eivishter is saying, not what am I going to give you, Chaverim, but what would I answer them? If I give you more than them, what kind of answer am I going to give them? Rabbi Lazar misunderstands that Yehivna, not what answer can I give them, but what schar can I give them if I give you more? So then he says, why? I'm not asking from a human being who doesn't have a limit. So the Eivishter like flicks him on the forehead, like to say, think with your forehead a little bit what I meant. Think with your brain a little more what I meant. The Giri, Bach Giri, I think the Aruch brings an expression on it that Giri also is Meloshin Ger, that it means in your schus, the schus of a kind of person like you, there'll be the Gerim Asid Lava will have a scar. So like don't ask for any more because you know I need to have something for them. Going back to stories about Chachamim who daven for rain, Rav Chama bar Chanina goes a tani, civilai also mitra. Rav Chama bar Chanina one time declared a tainis and no rain fell. Amrulay, so they said to him, Vahar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi goes a tani, civilai mitra. Didn't Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi declared a tainis and rain fell? Amrulay says, okay, what do you want from me? Ha no, ha barley voy. I'm one person, barley voy, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. It's somebody else, obviously he's better than me. Amrulay, so they said, okay, Dinesi, how about let's all come together, Vinichavin Daitin, and we'll all be Mechavin. Actually, the Tabri Tzibur Libayu, the Asi Mitra, then maybe the Tzibur, their hearts will be broken, and rain will come. A couple of different explanations in Mepharshim, what exactly they're saying over here, whether it means that we're saying, let's get together the two tzaddikim, Rav Chama, Rav Chanina, and Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and when the people see that you need two tzaddikim of that caliber, they're going to realize the situation is very serious and do tshuva. Or does it mean that the yechidim, that we said, the Masha says, that we're talking about the yechidim over here, the Talmid of Chachamim, who are fasting the original fast, are saying, let's all gather, until now it's just been us and you. Now, fine, let's gather together the whole tzibur. Now, obviously, just us yichidim doing it is not enough. We need the whole tzibur. Bon rachmi v'le'osim mitra. So they davened and no rain fell. Amalahu, so Rav Chama b'r'chanina turns to them and he says, Nichalachu sh'yavim matah b'shvilenu. Do you accept that rain should come on our behalf? Amar lehin. They said yes. Amar, so he said, okay, in that case, rakia, rakia, kati panayich. Sky, cover your face with clouds. Loi kati, the sky did not cover. He says, "Kama adin pnei rakia." How chutzpedik is the face of the rakia that it doesn't listen to the tzibur? Ikasi, sure enough, it covered up with clouds. But asti mitra and rain started falling. So what's going on over here? If he had that koyach to tell the sky that l'chatchila, why did he wait until now? Again, there's a number of different explanations. One again is that he needed the chutz of all the tzaddikim or of the tzibur. And another idea is that if the rain comes mitzad their tefillos, then it'll be a rain of ratzon. If the rain comes just because of the schus of the tzaddikim, then it's not going to be a rain of ratzon. So after they daven and it didn't work, he asks them, you know what? Do you want to go to Plan B instead? So we won't have gishmi ratzon, but at least it'll be rain. It means rain that are rotten, that are the Eivishter is pleased with us, and therefore he sends rain, as opposed to like so to speak that the tzaddikim forced him into it. Another time, Levi got the Tanis of Levi, this is Levi, the famous Talmud of Rebbe, declared a fast, v'layof mitzvah, and rained in full. Omer l'fonav, he says, Ribbonish l'olam, alisa v'yashavt b'amorim, you've gone up and sat up in Shemayim, v'einat merachem abonachem, you're not having rachmonis on your children. I'm speaking very harshly to David. Also mitzvah, sure enough, rain started falling, but the itla, but he became lame. He broke his hip or whatever it is, strained his hip muscles or whatever for having torque that way to the Eibishter. Amar Rav Elazar, and in fact, Rav Elazar says on that, La'olam al yachiyach adam dvorim klapim ma'ila, a person should never throw words like that against the Eibishter, like speak harshly to the Eibishter. Sha'arei adam godli tiyach dvorim klapim ma'ila, because you see a great person, Levi, did that, he spoke like that sharply to the Eibishter, v'itpa. And he became lame. Umanu, and who was that great person? Lame. We ask for Hagamale. Is that what happened? Was that what caused him to become lame? We have something else. For Halevi Achvik Kidma Kamedir Rebbe. We learned in Sukkah that Levi one time wanted to demonstrate in front of Rebbe Kidda. We have all over in Tanakh Vayikoy Dapayim Otsa. Vayikoy, Vayikdu, whatever. It means we learned in Sukkah. We learned in a couple of other places also that it's kind of a sort of acrobatic maneuver where you bend over and you're resting the top half of your body on your thumbs and then you lift yourself up. When you're lifting yourself up, you're having to put your whole body, your whole weight of your body on your hips. So when Levi tried that, then he became lame. He didn't broke or lame or whatever. He strained his muscles, whatever it is. Yeah. So that's what caused him. The answer is hava ha gamale. Both things caused it. Either some of the Foshim say all it means is he tiach devarim klapim ayla. So now, like so to speak, the Eibishter has it out for him. So the next time he was in a dangerous situation where he's showing kiddah, then he wasn't saved from the consequences. Or some of the Foshim say actually the showing kiddah itself is sort of an irresponsible thing to do. What are you doing? Such a difficult maneuver when you're not sure if you're going to be able to do it. So it's like he did two things wrong, so to speak. One by talking that way to the Eibishter, and another one by putting himself unnecessarily in danger.
How do you do kiddah?
From the various descriptions, I'm not sure if the vort is that you stand and then you bend double, so that your thumbs are touching the ground and then lift yourself up, or whether it means more like push-ups, like you prostrate your whole body on the ground and then I'm not sure actually, but yeah, either way. Yeah. Another time, Rav Chiya bar Lulyoni shaminu lahanachanoni. Rav Chiya bar Lulyoni one time heard some clouds, or Marsha says maybe not the clouds themselves, but the sound of the clouds, whatever, dekamri, that they're saying, Nesu v'nesu maya ba'amun and mayav. Come, let's go shed some water, let's go rain in Amun and mayav. They're passing over Eretz Yisrael. Clouds, like weather systems in the northern hemisphere usually go west to east. So they're coming from the Mediterranean, they're passing over Eretz Yisrael, and they're going to go east to Amun and mayav, Jordan. Am Lefana, Rav Chiya bar Lulyoni says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Kshenasata Torah La'am Chayisrael, when you were offering the Torah, when you gave the Torah to the Jewish people, to your Jewish people, first Chazarta Kol Olam, you shopped it around to all the nations of the world, V'lo Kibluah, and they didn't want to accept it, including Amun and Moab. V'achshavata Noisim Em Matzah, and now you want to give them rain and not us. Shadu Hacha, let them pour the rain down over here. Sure enough, Shadu Aduf Kayu, they poured down the rain where they were at Eretz Yisrael. This same Rav Chiya bar Lulyoni, Darash Rav Chiya bar Lulyoni, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, Tzadik katamo yifrach, the tzadik will flower, will blossom like a palm tree, ke'erez balabonin yiske, he will grow and become powerful like a cedar tree in Levonin. The question is, v'nema tamo lamanerez, v'nema erez lamanema tamo, why the double comparison? Why a palm tree and a cedar tree? Because, Ilu nema tamav la nema erez, because if it said a palm tree, if it compared a tzaddik only to a palm tree and not to an erez, ha'yisya, then you might have thought, ma tamar en gizay machlif, just like a palm tree, its trunk does not regenerate. If you cut down a palm tree, it never regrows. Af tzaddik chas v'shalom en gizay machlif. So tzaddik, maybe chas v'shalom, his trunk won't regrow. What does that mean? Rashi says it means that maybe it means he won't be zerchot v'tchias anesim. In various other places, there's a couple of different other explanations, and this is Gemara, is also in Baba Basra. The Rashbam over there explains, I think, that it means that there won't be any zecher of the good things that he did. There's a couple of different explanations, anyway. L'chachnem erez, therefore it says an erez, which does regrow. Now, we said before the other day, we were talking about Bilam's bracha to the Jewish people, we compared them to an erez, which doesn't regrow. We're going to get to that in a minute. Even nema erez, nema tamar, and if it was the other way around, if compared a tzaddik only to a cedar tree and not to a palm tree, ma erez ein oiseperis, just like a palm tree does not, not a palm tree, a cedar tree does not produce fruit, it doesn't produce edible fruit. ask Tzadik Chas V'Shalom Eino Tzepeiris. Maybe a Tzadik Chas V'Shalom doesn't produce fruit either. Rashi says he doesn't have Schar Lasid Lava. Again, other Mepharshim talk about it means they won't have children who follow him, etc. Yeah. Rachach Nemar Tamar V'Nemar Erez. Therefore, the Pasuk compares him to both a Tamar and an Erez. Question is, Erez Dizim Achlif. You're telling me that an Erez, that a cedar tree, the trunk regrows? Now, the Gemara could have asked from what it asked the other day about Bilam, from what we said the other day about Bilam. The Gemara has a better proof from a Din Halacha. Whether, you know, Mela by Bilam, okay, you say it's things of Agadah, it's not meant literally, but it, a matter of Halacha. Halacha is Halacha. It means it's meant literally. No. Bilam had said, Bilam had compared the Jewish people to Erez, Arozim Alim Alim. And we said over there that an Erez is Ein Gizim Achlif. Once you chop it down, it's a goner. So maybe Chas V'Shalom, yeah.
Maybe
Yeah. So how can you tell me an Erez is Gizei Machlis, that it regrows, that the trunk will regrow if it's cut? Well, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Halakeach Ilan Mechaveir Lokos, if a person buys a tree from somebody else where he's going, where the deal is, he's going to buy the tree, cut it down, he's buying it for firewood, basically. Magbiyam in a Kauka Tefach Lokosis, he has to leave one Tefach close to the ground and cut only above that in order for the tree to regenerate. Besadana shikma shnei tefachim. If it's the thick trunk of a shikma is a sycamore tree, the tree that produces some species of figs. But whatever it is, it was very common in those days that you would a shikma tree like that. The wood of it was very good for building, but you want to have good thick strong beams from it. So what they would do is every year they would cut off the newly grown branches, and then all the energy from those, the energy that was going into making branches, instead goes into making the trunk thicker, and therefore the trunk becomes thicker and thicker. So if it's a sadhana shikma, if it's one that's already been cut, that's already been pruned like that before, and the trunk is becoming stiff, then you have to leave two tvachim. The psulasa shikma, if it's a virgin shikma, one that has never been cut like that, you need shlosha tvachim. But kanim of a gfanim, if you buy reeds like bamboo or whatever, or gfanim or vines, mean a pakakul amayla, you can only cut them off from after the first joint. You have there's like joints in them and in different places, like knobs on them or whatever, and you have to cut above that, so it can regenerate. However, but to call them uvar razim, when it comes to palm trees and cedar trees, chofer l'mata u'mashrish, then you can dig as far down as you want and even uproot all the roots out of the ground, l'fishen gizeh machlif, because the trunk is anyway not going to regenerate. So we see that a cedar tree doesn't regenerate. What was the comparison over there about the tzaddik? The answer is hachab mayaskin and b'shamine arazim. What are we talking about over here? We're talking about the other kinds of cedar tree. Because the Rabba Barahona, Asorim Mina Arozim. We learned in Rosh Hashanah a few weeks ago that there's ten kinds of trees that are all in the cedar family. Shenema Ethan Mamidba, Erez Shita Bahadas for Gemma, the possible seven trees over there, and then we said there were three other trees that were added over there, so you have ten altogether. So the Braisa that's talking about an Erez that's not going to regrow is talking about the actual cedar tree. The one we were talking about, the tzaddik, is compared to it, the tree that will regrow, it's talking about one of the other ones. Or some of course say the other way around. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in Braisa, Maisa Rabbi Eliezer Shagazah Shloish Eser Taniyas Al Tzibur. One time it happened that Rabbi Eliezer was gozer 13 fasts on the Tzibur, the full set of fasts that we learned in the Mishnayos in the first parak.
3, 3, and 7,
yeah. V'lo yodu k'shamim, and still rained in full. V'achroina hischila tzibur lotis, the last one, the 13th one was over. The tzibur started leaving, the shul, actually not the shul, but the square where they daven, whatever. Amar lahem, Rav Elazar says to them, chikantim kvorim la'atmechem, have you arranged graves for yourselves? In other words, at this point, that's it, you know, you guys are goners. All you have to do at this point is to dig graves for yourselves. Go kol amukhiya, everybody burst out crying. The Yoduk Shomim, and rain started falling. That was the thing that was needed to break their hearts, the last thing.
Go
literally means like they cried out. Rashi says go means like the noise that sock, Rashi says. They cried out from a yiga, sure, like if an ox lows, whatever, yeah, it means they're making a noise. Like the Chassam Sofer has an interesting explanation about it, that Rabbi Eliezer is telling them that maybe this drought is because there were Tamar Chachamim who passed away and you didn't give them a hesped like you're supposed to. The Gemara says in Shabbos that when Tamar Chacham passes away and they don't get a proper hesped, the people deserve to be buried alive. So therefore he's telling them, to kandem kvorom atmechem, you guys had better start preparing graves for yourself, because obviously you still have that avera. Go kolam uchiyah, so they all burst out crying, for those tamar chachamim who had not been properly eulogized all that time, and that was it, that was all they needed, v'yodu shavim. Shuv Maisa Rabbi Eliezer Shiyorod Lifnat Teva. Then another time it happened with Rabbi Eliezer that he went to daven by the Amud. V'am Esrim V'Avah Brachos. He said the 24 brachos that we learned at the beginning of the second parak, the regular brachos plus the extra six for a Titus. V'leinen, and he still wasn't answered with rain. Yorod Rabbi Akiva Achrov. Then Rabbi Akiva went to daven by the Amud after him. V'amar, and he started saying, Avinu Malkeinu Ein Lanu Melech Halata. Avinu Malkeinu Laman Characham Aleinu. Have Rachmanis on us for your sake. V'yorod Shavim, and rain started falling. So all the Rabbanon were talking. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva must be greater than Rabbi Eliezer. So Basko came out and said, no. It's not that Rabbi Akiva is greater than Rabbi Eliezer. In fact, Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Eliezer's Talmud. But Rabbi Akiva is Mavra Amidosev. He's willing to overlook when somebody acts wrongly against him. And Rabbi Eliezer is not. So therefore, the Eivishter is willing to overlook the faults of the Jewish people. So if Rabbi Akiva is Mavra Amidosev, and so he is greater in a way. So there's a couple of different explanations of that. One, there's an explanation that's brought from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that just like we have with Shammai and Hillel, Shammai we know with the stories of the famous Gerim over there, that Shammai was a captain, Hillel was more gentle with them. So what is it? There is the idea of Pichsidus that Shammai is Mitzad Gvura and Hillel is Mitzad Chesed, but still that's no reason to treat people like that. It's because Shammai held as a matter of halacha that when people are disrespecting Talmid Chachamim, you have to stand up for the covered of the Torah, for the covered of the Talmid Chachamim. That was his shitta. As opposed to Hillel said, true, but after all, you can be Mavra Amidosev. You can find a gentler way to do it. Similarly, he was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer is Shamusi, the Talmud of Bishamai. So he held according to the Shitta of Bishamai that you can't be Mavra Amidosev when there's the honor of a Talmud Chacham involved. Rabbi Akiva didn't hold that way, but it's not one's greater than the other. It's just two different equally valid Shittas. There's another explanation that's brought from the Mabit that says basically that he says that Rabbi Eliezer was already perfect. He didn't have to be Mavra Amidosev in the sense that he didn't have to force himself to act the right way because he already acted the right way from the beginning. Whereas Rabbi Akiva had to conquer his Yetzirah. He started out as an Amoris after all, and therefore he's Mavra Amidosev. He had to go the extra mile to reach what he became.
The Basco had to come to clarify
the situation, right? By the way, the Chassam Sofer has a very interesting thing that he quotes this Gemara as a matter in a discussion of halacha. We know the famous vote that the Mezitch Magid says that there were originally, he says, 13 nuschaot of tefillah, one for each of the 12 shvatim, and one for anybody who doesn't know what shevet they're from. And he said the 13th is the Arizal's nusach, Shara Kolo, and that's why everybody who doesn't know what shevet they're from or what nusach belongs to their shevet should daven that nusach. So Chassam Sofer says, take a look at our Gemara here, he says. Rabbi Eliezer was descended from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because there's a Medrash that talks about that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Ruach HaKodesh, that Rabbi Eliezer is going to talk about the Dinim of Parah, the Egla Bashayim of Parah Bashalesh. He was very impressed. He said, I hope that this person is going to be one of my descendants, the Kachava. So Rabbi Eliezer then is from Shevet Levi. He had one Nusach. Rabbi Akiva is descended from Gerim. So therefore, he would daven the Shara Kolol, he would daven the 13th Nusach. But you see, both of them are davening by the Amud in the same minion, and they're both being Moitzi, the Kahal. So obviously it can't be, the Chassam Sofer says, that they're davening different Nuskalis. So therefore this whole thing that the Mezitch Magid says doesn't go. So other Achronim talk about that maybe it's not such a, that's not such a kasha, because for one thing we're not saying over here of Eliezer would already daven Shemoneh Esrei. Rabbi Akiva is not davening Shemoneh Esrei, he's saying Avinu Malkeinu. And even in Shemoneh Esrei itself, there's not such a big difference between the Nuskalis, and maybe a person can be Moitzi one person from another person's Nuskalis, etc. So it's not really a stira against what the Mezitch Magid is saying. Tanan Abanan, we learn in a place. So Ad Masa Yu Agshamim Yodim Va Tzibur Poskim Tani. So how much rain has to fall that then the Tzibur can break off from their tainis? Either different Farshim talk about whether we mean that they don't have to that they don't have to continue the series of fasts, or does it mean that they can break off in the middle of an actual fast? That we said in the Mishnah that if it falls before Netzachama or before Chatzos, whatever, how much rain has to there been? Kimloit Berach HaMachresha. As much as the bend of the joint of the plow. The plow is a curved piece of metal that you use to dig up the dirt. when you put it all the way, you put it as far as they'll go into the dirt. So now you make a furrow in the dirt. You have a furrow in the middle, and then little bits of dirt by the side of it. If the rain fills up the entire furrow, which is as deep as the plow went into the ground, that's enough. Divrei Rav Meir, v'cham v'amim. The Chum say it depends on the kind of ground. B'charova tefach, if it's dry ground, you need the rain to penetrate one tefach. B'beinan is tifchayiv, if it's average ground, it's not completely dry, but not completely moist either. It has to penetrate two tefachim. Avuda shleisha tefachim. And if it's well worked land, if it's plowed land, then it has to go in three tefachim. The softer the ground, the more the rain is able to penetrate. You don't have a tefach of rain that comes from above, that the tahaim, that the deep, the ground, the underground water doesn't come out to greet it three tefachim. In other words, there's more, there's an isarusa de la'ela of rain. The isarusa de la'sata of the water from underneath the ground comes up more than that, three tefachim. But we learn in a braita two tefachim, and the answer is similarly like Asha, kan ba'avuda, kan v'she'en avuda. One's talking about ground that's already been worked, that's already been planted, that's been plowed. So then you need three tefachim for the tahaim to come up. But if it's ein avuda, then if it's avuda, then you only need two tefachim. You only need two tefachim to come up. If it's ein avuda, then you need three. In a bunch of places in Chassidus, actually, there seems to be a different girsa that they had, I think based on a Zoya or something, that the word is not tefach, but tipa, and not tifchayim, but tipayim, that you have one drop comes milamayla, and two or three drops come corresponding to it milamata. And it talks about many places in Chassidus of how this is the idea that an isurus of leila evokes a much greater isurus of lefata, etc. When they pour the water on the mizbeach on Sukkos, one tahoim says to the other, meaning tahoim, the two tahoimus means, no, it actually means the water up in the sky, the mayim al yonim, and the mayim rachonim, that are under the ground. They say to each other, Abba me mecha, make your water flow. Abba malosh nachal nevear, Rashi says. Kel shnei reim ani shemeh, because they hear the sound of the two friends, the water and the wine that are being poured on the mizbeach together. That evokes this response from them. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Tahoim al tahoim, karel kol tzinoirecha." One tahoim calls to the other from the sound of your tzinoirecha, of your pipes. When the water and the wine are sloshing down the pipes from the mizbeach, then that causes that one tahoim to call out to the other tahoim that it's time to start providing water. Amar Rava, the didi chazili ahi ridia. I personally saw Ridia, who was the malach in charge of bringing the rain to wherever it's needed. The rain itself is in the hands of the Eibishter, but this malach Ridia is in charge of making it fall wherever the Eibishter is. Domi l'egla tilsa, he resembles a calf. A tilsa means a three-year-old calf. Now she's in Gerdes, it's Rebbe Chanan Aliz. O pirsa sifase, his lips are split, or are like spread open, like in a smile, because of the good news that he's bringing of rain. He stands between the upper tahaim, between the lower tahaim, meaning under the ground, and the upper tahaim in the sky. And the tahaim ilah amalech hasher meimach. He speaks. He calls out to the upper tahaim, to the water above, and says, "Hasher meimach, I'll make your water come down." The tahaim tatal amalech abba meimach. And to the lower tahaim, he says, "Make your water well up." Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz." The whole pasuk, as the pasuk in Shir Hashirim goes, "Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz." The blossoms are seen in the land. Es hazamer hidia, the time of singing has come. V'kol ha'tur nishma ba'arteinu, and the voice of the tur is heard in our land. So Rashi says there's two meanings of what the Gemara means by bringing this pasuk. One is that the nitzanim refers to the nisach hamayim, because just like blossoms on a tree only come once a year, so does nisach hamayim. So when that comes, there's the time of singing, because the Levim sing in the Beis Mikdash when the Nisach HaMayim is being done. And then that evokes Kol HaTur, the sound of the Tur. Tur in Aramaic is like Shur in Hebrew. It means the sound of the ox, which is our Malach over here, this Malach Ridya, who resembles a calf, a baby ox. Or Rashi's second explanation is that it means that it's plain and simple. Hanitzanim niru, it's the time during the time of the year when the blossoms are seen, v'azamer yigia, and the time when the birds are singing, is also the time. But kol haTorah is also the time when the voice of this Torah, of this ox-like malach, is heard in our land, telling the sky and the earth, telling the sky and the earth to start providing water. which is, yeah. Marshall talks about a long thing that why Daphne does he resemble an ox, because he represents the ox, which is the model of Io, which is the time of the end of the rain of the rainy season. So like he's bringing the good news that the rain has accomplished what it needed to. Other Mephoreshim talk about the idea that he's like an ox, because an ox is used for plowing the fields, and that's the rain is needed for the ox to accomplish what it needs, and therefore the Malach in charge of rain is like an ox. It's a matter of time now, so we'll leave the rest of the paragraph for tomorrow. That's the